You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me for the first time Ryan Gradersky. Ryan is he's born and raised in New York, and he's been politically active since his teens. He is a frequent guest on Fox News, Fox Business, and many radio shows nationwide, and writes for the Washington Examiner. He is really active in supporting and working for local candidates that he believes in. And he is acutely aware of American politics on the national scale as well, and that's what we want to talk to him about. I actually learned to know Ryan about 10 years ago when I just moved into this particular place in Queens, and I noticed there was a sign for Ron Paul on my block, yeah. And I was kind of surprised, and so I put a note in his mailbox and says, "Hey, listen, I know Ron Paul. He comes on my radio show from time to time," and so Ryan then contacted me, and we've become friends and neighbors ever since then. So glad that you could join me today, Ryan.
Thank you for having me on, Jay. I really appreciate it.
And I really appreciate it. We met up at a coffee shop, a restaurant down the street a couple of weeks ago or so, a couple of times, and I've really been impressed with your knowledge of national politics, and you really are immersed in this. This is your love, isn't it?
This is my, I wouldn't say love, I'd say this is my burden to bear. I have friends and family who ask me all the time, why are you involved in politics? And I always sit there and say, you know, why is it none on none? You know, mm-hmm. I've not done it for some time period, and I've always ended up coming back to it, mm-hmm. you know, whether I like it or not. So it's what you're drawn to, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it's you feel passionate about things you believe in. And you must do something about them, and this is probably your calling. This is what the good Lord made you for, I suspect, and that's what you're doing. So listen, you know, this hatred towards our current president, I think, is unmatched, at least in my lifetime, and I go back a lot longer than you do, Ryan. I can remember Richard Nixon's days and the hatred and the vitriol towards him. Now, that seemed to really mobilize the Democrats, the Democratic base, for a while, and I suppose still is, because there still seems to be a lot of venomous attitude towards the president. Then come along the Kavanaugh hearings, and that seemed to charge the batteries of Republicans somewhat. What is your read right now in terms of the direction of this election? Do you see the Republicans still retaining more energy since the Kavanaugh hearings, or do you think that might be wearing off, or how do you see things playing out here?
Well, it wore off. Well, I mean, if you look at, there's a lot to look at. So if you look at polling, it wore off a little bit. If you look at early voting sample size, it's up a decent amount. It's just a question, and it's also different in different places. So there was a poll. There was early voting done in Nevada and in the rural counties where Trump won by 40 or 50 points, mm-hmm. Turnout was triple what it was in 2014. And if you look at other places like North Carolina, the Democratic voting edge is very, very high. In mm-hmm. Florida, the Republicans have like a 55,000 vote early voter advantage, even despite, you know, polls like Quinnipiac, which that's a garbage polling firm. I won't even cite them. But CNN, which usually does very good polls, believe it or not, had the Democrat winning the governorship by 12 points, which is the biggest lead of any poll. So despite them saying they'll win by 12 points, Republicans have a 55,000 voter advantage in early turnout so far in Florida. I mean, there's 2 weeks to go, so there's plenty of time for something to change, but that is, you know, where it is currently. I think that there's probably, I would say, about an 80 to 85% chance of Republicans retaining the Senate, and maybe about a 25 to 30% chance of them retaining the House.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's probably a lot better than for Republicans than it was before Kavanaugh, right?
Yeah. No. Certainly Kavanaugh did amp up people and did energize people in a way that they hadn't before that. It would have been a lot lower had Kavanaugh not been in the picture. Basically, when it comes down to it, when the Senate, when it comes down to the Senate, I'll talk about that for a second because it's a little easier.
Yeah.
There are 10 Democrats running in seats that in states that Trump won, and only one Republican running in a state that Hillary won. That would be Dean Heller running in Nevada. There are two Republican seats that are in jeopardy, one being Nevada, being the seat I just mentioned, Dean Heller, and the other being in Arizona, being an open seat that Jeff Flake used to hold that he's now retiring, basically being pushed out of office because he's so unpopular. In Nevada, I think Dean Heller does have a very good chance. Early turnout in the rural counties is very, very strong. He's held many rallies there. The Republican gubernatorial candidate is very has been polling ahead of the Democrat recently, Adam Laxalt, he's the Attorney General. He's running for governor. His poll numbers have been pretty decent, and it's somewhere that Republicans could kind of stop themselves from being overwhelmed if it's a blue wave election. The other being in Arizona. Now, Arizona had been trending Democrat for the entire year, and the Democratic candidate, Kristen Sinema, just recently had a week, or 2 weeks rather, full of old videotapes resurfaced where she bashed the state of Arizona. She called Arizona the meth lab of democracy. She said, you know, don't be a bad state like Arizona. Don't be crazy like Arizona. Another tape resurfaced of her telling Americans that they should join the Taliban. So that has really kind of hurt her. So those are the two states in question. They're both toss-ups right now. Certainly Republicans could win them as likely as they could. There's a better chance of winning Nevada, but they could win them both or they could lose them both. As far as the Democratic-controlled states, and there's also, sorry, one more thing. There is Tennessee, which was an election that Republicans thought they could lose a few months ago. That looks fine. It looks like Marsha Blackburn, the Republican congressman running for Senate, is going to win that election.
Mm-hmm.
So the Democratic states that are up.
Go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll tell you really briefly. Of the Democratic states, there's only a few handful that are really competitive at this point. It would be Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, and Florida. And Republicans are likely to win North Dakota. And I would say there's a 50-50 chance of Missouri and Montana, Indiana, and Florida are all about a 35% chance.
Mm-hmm. So there's a reasonably good chance that Republicans could pick up a couple of seats in the Senate?
Yeah, there's as good of a chance of them having 50 seats as them having 54 seats.
So that'd be a big difference.
So Florida is a gamble. Indiana, there's polls saying they're winning or losing. There's not a lot of public polls, though, in Indiana. And Montana, there's not a lot of public polls. But either one, and actually Donald Trump Jr. is all over the state of Montana right now campaigning for the Republican. So there's a pretty good chance of those three states going. Missouri, once again, is 50-50, but the Republicans really have an operation out there, and they have to just hold Nevada and Arizona. If the generic ballot moves over maybe a point or two, the whole entire game will be changed, and they'll probably end up with 53 or 54 Senate seats, which is what they basically need, because 2020 is not the best map for Republicans, and they're probably going to lose two seats. So they do need to win. They do need to hold whatever seats they have right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, so, and the House is, you give only a 20-25% chance of the Republicans hanging on to the House, huh?
Yeah, there's, if I could break it down, and I'll try to do it short, because I know that there's 435 seats. If you're a Republican donor and you want to donate to a seat that's going to matter, you would look at Maine 2nd Congressional. It's the only Republican in New England. It's a very important seat to win. Claudia Tenney in New York 22, John Faso in New York 21. Dave Brat in Virginia 7. So important to keep Dave Brat's seat, especially if you are somebody who likes limited government and maximum freedom. Dave Brat is the most important candidate.
Libertarian.
New Jersey 3rd, Virginia 5, Florida 26, 27, Culberson's seat out in Texas. I don't know the number for that. Kansas is 2nd Congressional District. The New Mexico 3rd seat, and then probably out in California, you'll look at California's 48 and 35, and Washington 6. So So those are the seats that will really, and Illinois 6. Those are the seats that are really going to tell us at the end of the day how Republicans, if they're going to win or not. Those dozen seats are going to be the factor of if the Republicans hold on by 3 or 4 or 5 seats, or if they lose by, you know, 30 seat plus wave.
All right, help us, because we have limited time. I have so many more questions, but limited time. Help our listeners know what the difference will be. If the Democrats gain control of the House, and especially if they can gain control of both branches of the legislature, what will that mean for the Trump presidency?
Well, if they gain both branches, it's bad news, especially with two members of the Supreme Court being over the age of 80. It means we're going to hold all the new judgeship appointments. That'll mean that will be terrible. But I don't think they're going to lose control of the Senate. If they lose control of the House, though, Robert Mueller is already saying that his investigation, which is coming to a close right after the midterm elections, he's saying don't expect a big collusion story, because there was no collusion. So if no matter what, though, if he hands a 600-page document over Republican Democrats, if they control Congress, Maxine Waters will have a chairmanship. I mean, she will sit there and use it to try to impeach the president.
That's incredible. I just had to chuckle, though, last night. I watched part of President Trump's speech from a rally.
Fantastic.
I guess it was really funny. I mean,
it was so good.
He talked about the taxes and the taxes. You know, when people kick the bucket is the word he used. When he says, if you don't like your kids, don't give them anything. But if you like them, we're going to have something for you. And when you kick the bucket, your kids can have what you want them to have under our president.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, he gets the idea of freedom way better than the Democrats do. I mean, and it's so insane right now. And the biggest problem with the Trump white presidency that I have, as somebody who supported Trump since the day he ran for office, is he's hired so many terrible people into his White House. And I'm very hopeful that if the next 6 years, that certain people will go and will be replaced by better people, which is right now not been the case so much.
All right, with a minute left, the equity markets got hit really hard today. Michael Oliver is suggesting he doesn't think we're going to see the real bear market until next year. He thinks we'll see some more lower prices in the Dow this year yet. But then he thinks we'll rally, and it won't mean until next year that the people really realize that we're in a horrible bear market again. How much do you think the equity markets will play? Supposing that we have a weak equity market between now and 2 weeks from now, how much of an impact will stock prices have on this election?
I mean, if the Dow plummets by over 1,000 points on any given day in several days in a row, and we see a tremendous trajectory downward, if it goes under 20,000, I think we're going to have a serious conversation. But the fact that it's raised by more than 30% since Trump became president, I think that ebbs and flows are kind of ignored, because the general trajectory of the economy has been pretty good since he became president.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That would make sense. Certainly, would like to know your thoughts on the caravan that's coming up. It seems to me something that's really been set up to try to make Trump look bad.
It's 10,000 people at this point. Okay, I know we have like 30 seconds left, so I'll just run down three quick things that Trump could do. One, he should fire Kirstjen Nielsen from DHS because she doesn't know what the hell she's doing. Secondly, set up 10 cities along the border to house every 10,000 persons. Third, put the military, take them from Afghanistan and put them inside the Mexican border so they cannot reach the interior of the United States. And fourth, he should halt all visas from Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador until they can get a hold of it. Not only will we repel your illegal aliens, but we will halt any legal immigration coming from your country as well, and put real pressures on those governments as well as Mexico. Because unless Mexico starts getting with it and starts working with us on this issue, it will never get solved. And we really need a DHS secretary right now who knows what they're doing. And Kirstjen Nielsen has no clue what she's doing.
Well, it all makes a lot of sense to what you're saying to me, Ryan, because what is it? It's supposed to be defense, and we have all our soldiers in Afghanistan, and now we have something like the Romans had. The barbarians.
A stupid war that should have ended years ago.
And we have the barbarians at the gate, but we don't worry about that. We have our troops around the world. Well, in any event, yeah. We are out of time. Ryan, thanks for joining me. It's really a pleasure hearing. I realize it's your burden, but I thank God that you're doing what you've been designed to do. It's your passion, and you got to go with that. You know, you've got to go with that, Ryan. So thank you so much for being with us. Well, folks, don't go away because right after the break, we'll be with Alistair MacLeod. He's going to talk about the impending end of the current credit cycle and what that may mean for your pocketbook and mine. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Alistair MacLeod.
Triumph Gold holds a 100% interest in the District Scale Free Gold Mountain Gold Copper Project in Yukon, with a government-maintained road accessing their 200-square-kilometer property. The 2018 drill program has resulted in exciting discoveries to date, hitting the richest intersection ever in a porphyry system in Yukon. The company is well-funded and has a large institutional holding, including Goldcorp and Zijin Mining. Triumph trades on the TSX Venture under the symbol TIG and the OTC markets TIGCF. The website is triumphgoldcorp.com.
Gold Mining Inc., ticker symbol GOLD on the TSX and GLDLF on the OTC, is the biggest bet for gold investors and legendary investors like Doug Casey, Rick Rule, and Marin Katusa, who put millions of dollars into backing the company, along with institutional investors. The insiders own over 20%. Gold Mining has strong cash and no debt. It's one of the top 1% of gold companies that has over 20 million ounces of gold resources. Visit goldmining.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.